Hey, so welcome everybody. This is Terry DeMayo. Today is May 23rd, 2016, and this is the coaching ethics call for the October Life Coach Training Group, and this is section one. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Good. When I said October, I you better make sure. So. Good. Good. So, how are you guys doing going through the material? Interesting? New? Questions? Did anybody look at the stuff?
Yes.
Okay, good. Is this new material for you?
Yes.
I wouldn't say new.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't
this is Jennifer.
Just a lot of it.
Yeah, there is a lot of it. That's why way back at the beginning when you had your overview call with Abigail, she suggested you start on it sooner rather than later. You remember
that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, did you want to say something?
I was just saying, I was just going to say what you said was I reviewed it early on in the class, and so it was always kind of top of mind, but it was a lot to digest, so I'm actually glad that I did it early on.
Right, right, right. And for some of you, these concepts are not totally new. For many of you, it's all totally new. When I put this curriculum for this class together, a lot of this was new for me, and I practiced law for 25 years. So I did a lot of research and thought into what was relevant and what wasn't. So, you know, the fact that there's a lot there or that that's your impression, it's because it is. It's not necessarily limited thinking about it. Let's talk about a couple of the concepts that I want to really bring your attention. Informed consent is one of those big things that we work with. When you have an active coaching practice, these issues will come up all the time. So I recently signed some informed consent forms at a physician's office for some minor surgery. Oh my gosh, the informed consent there, you know, I could die, I could be paralyzed, I could be brain damaged. I mean, it just went on and on and on. What was interesting about it was that the person working in the doctor's office, she didn't know I was a lawyer, and she said to me, "You don't need to read that stuff, it'll just scare you."
Oh. Whoa.
Would that be informed consent if I took her advice and signed it? I can tell by your laughter you get it, right?
Yeah, that's brutal. I think
I
it's brutal.
It was pretty funny. I thought it was pretty funny because she basically negated all those forms. She told me not to read them.
Yeah.
And you know what? I didn't. I just signed them. I mean, I've had a few minor surgeries before when they put you under general anesthesia. You know, there is always a risk of a lot of things going wrong. You know, don't tell somebody, you know, one thing and then act in a different way. And as the doctor's agent, he is responsible for her training, so he's liable for any mistakes that she makes, including telling me not to read the informed consent form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to bet she says that to everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, so she can get out of it quickly.
Yeah. So informed consent has to be, yeah, right, so she can get me out of the office and I'm not reading like pages of, oh my God, you know.
Yeah, and then you don't ask her any questions either because it's, you know, raising questions in you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my former husband, who is no longer with us on earth, bless his soul, he was a law professor, and he took me in for a chest x-ray once. And I was very, very sick. I had pneumonia and a huge fever. I was coughing. And so he signed the informed consent form for me. And he crossed out everything on the form and said x-ray only, you know, because basically it was a blanket consent form. And it said they could do anything from, you know, treatment, surgery, anything they wanted. It was a blanket consent form. And he crossed it out and wrote in x-ray only. And that caused quite a stir at the nurse's station. And the head nurse came out and started to scold him and rebuke him and say, well, if the hospital catches on fire while she's back there, we won't be able to treat her. And his answer was, if the hospital catches on fire while she's back there, I will change the consent form. So, it can raise some pretty hilarious and interesting issues. For coaching, however, I think the main thing we want clients to understand is we're not therapists, we're not trained as therapists, we don't provide advice, and we are going to help them do what we can help them do, but basically, they need to be honest with us about what their condition is and keep us informed and not be led to believe that they're getting something that they're not giving. We don't treat disease. We don't prescribe drugs. And I've had clients refer to me, like they'll say, so I told my friend that my therapist said blah, blah, blah. And I said, wait a minute, are you referring to me? Because I want that informed consent to continue throughout our relationship. She said, yeah. I said, well, I just want to remind you, I'm not your therapist. I'm not any kind of therapist. I'm a coach. She said, oh, I know that. But I don't know exactly how that switched in her mind, but it did. So has anybody had any issues come up around informed consent?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay. I just started with a new client this morning. Mom is paying the bill for her 19-year-old daughter. She sent me, now let's talk about confidentiality. Mom said, I want you to coach her. She's having issues around food and eating. She gained 7 pounds her freshman year, and she's, you know, really crazy about food and exercising like crazy and whatnot. And I said, fine. When the we made the appointment, I said, just make sure she wants this. Now, this was a client that I know. She was, in fact, one of my coaching students who then became a client. And now a couple of years, 3 years have passed, in fact, since she and I worked together. She's asking me to work with her daughter. So I made sure that the daughter knew that even though her mom is going to pay my bills, that everything she says to me is going to be confidential just between she and I, other than the fact of the dates of our appointments and that she showed up for them so that the billing can be done accurately. And she said, fine. And we had a very, very revealing conversation around at that point. What else comes up around confidentiality that you might be having questions about? How about the client who's a danger to themselves? Understand how that works?
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is Rachel. I have a client that I'm health coaching with, the wild color, the wife, and I am now life coaching with the husband. And I've made it very clear with the husband that I am not sharing any information about anything. But health coaching is a little different because it's food and things like that. But I'm nervous now after these ethics classes to make sure that, you know, I mean, they both know that I'm coaching with both of them. But, and I, you know, they know that I'm seeing them and the dates and everything. And I'm just curious, you know, other than I know I can talk to them about when I'm seeing both of them and the fact that I am seeing both of them. But other than that, I can't answer anything if they ask me anything about what's happening. I know that.
Well, and
other,
really, technically, I mean,
no.
I assume one of them referred the other one to you. They both didn't just coincidentally get to you.
Yes, they both, yeah, they referred. Started out as health coaching, and now we're doing some life coaching.
Okay. What is the issue the husband is asking you for help with?
Career. He's been a plumber for 20-something years, and he hates it, and he's been kind of trying different things, went back to college, and, you know, just kind of needs help with the direction.
Okay.
Figuring out what he wants to do next.
And what are your concerns here?
Well, I guess my concerns were I just wanted to be really clear on the language around. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just curious if there's anything that other than the date and time of the session, the coaching, I can't really talk about anything else. Like, everything else is off limits, correct? Like, because
yeah.
The wife has been kind of hinting, like sending me emails, and it's almost like she wants updates on him.
Yes, okay.
And so
now, do you know what I'm
a little nervous, and I've been really careful about saying it's all confidential.
I want to put this aside because this is a good one to take through our ethics decision-making model. I always like to use a live example. So what I want to do is put your question on hold because I think you've got more issues at stake here than you realize. So how about we use this for the class model? Is
sure.
That okay?
Is that later in this call or?
Yeah. We're going to
do
it in a few minutes. After, I just want to hit some of the high points of this material to make sure, you know, the places where people don't always understand from the recordings. I'd like to go over that in class. So in a few minutes, I'm going
sure.
to come back to this question. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So you've got a lot of info there on confidentiality. Here, there's not only a, well, I'll just leave that go for the time being. Now, exceptions to confidentiality, if you've got a court order to turn over your records or come in and give a deposition, obviously got to. Psychiatrists, therapists, doctors don't need to do it. We do. Now, that being said, I don't know of anybody in our community, our Martha Beck community, or anybody in any other coaching community that I'm aware of since I've been a coach in the last 9 years that has gotten a subpoena. And it's the kind of thing that I probably would have heard about if it had happened. So I'm probably pretty safe in concluding that I think this would be very, very rare. But I want you to know that it's a possibility. And I could see it coming up in a divorce situation where somebody is suspecting, you know, in a high-stakes divorce situation, maybe a child custody thing where they're trying to prove that your client was depressed and should not have access to the child, something like that, or financial dealings that may have been disclosed to you. So it's a possibility, although I think it's very remote. The right of confidentiality belongs to the client. They can always waive it or give it up. For example, in Rachel's scenario, Rachel, the husband could say, oh, it's okay, you can tell the wife anything. I had a 20-something-year-old that I coached for a while. She had a lot of depression and a lot of anxiety over her career. She was very perfectionistic and really hard on herself and very ambitious. And her mom, you know, the apples don't fall far from the tree. The mom was very anxious about what was going on. The mom was also a personal friend of mine, and during that period of time, she invited me to lunch a lot. She was very good about not asking prying questions, but I could tell she was very anxious. And at one point, the daughter said, would you just talk to my mom and let her know I'm okay? And I did that. So there, you know, even though I saw the mom was anxious, it was not my job to say, look, your daughter is okay. She's doing fine. Because even that little bit would have been a disclosure that violated confidentiality. The mom always thought there were things I should know, and I would sit there and listen, and sometimes they were helpful, sometimes not. More often than not, it was just the mom expressing her worry that her daughter was okay. That's okay for other people to give you information. The new client I started this morning, I got an email from the mom telling me what's going on from her point of view. I shared that with my client. I told the mom I was going to share it. I shared it with my client, and I said, but really what I want to know is what's going on from your perspective. So those are some ways to handle those kind of things. From time to time, I've had clients email me and say, is it okay if I tell somebody you're my client? Absolutely, because that's their right. I get that question from time to time because somebody wants to write something nice about me on Facebook, but they think they need my permission. They absolutely don't. And or to tell anybody they're working with me, not necessary. But my job is to keep the fact that I'm working with them absolutely confidential. Now, if you've got a situation where the client has a dangerous situation going on and is potentially suicidal, this one, I want you to pay really close attention to this. I will just let the cat out of the bag. There is a question on your certification review about the suicide issue. It is an open book review, so you'll be able to go over everything at that point. But here's what I want you to understand. First of all, when in doubt, take action. Because this is not a place where a mistake can be rectified. If somebody kills themselves, they're dead. Cannot go back and say, whoops, let's fix it. Secondly, you have some materials about asking very pointed questions to potentially suicidal person. And they don't have to mention the word suicide. If they seem hopeless or despondent, it's a good idea to ask those questions right then and there. And I asked those questions actually to a family member of mine who was a cousin. It's actually my nephew is going through a breakup, and his mom asked him to call me to chat about it. And he was very despondent and upset about it and you know, feeling hopeless. I hadn't talked to him in a while. And I said, I understand you're feeling very low here. Are you thinking about harming yourself? Are you thinking about taking your life? And he told me no. so it was fine. And it was a very clear, strong no, and I relied on that. And I talked to him again last night, and, you know, he's up and down. It's tough going through a breakup. But don't hesitate to ask those questions when you see a behavioral change that points in the direction of hopelessness, insurmountable psychic pain, changes in behavior. The recordings and the materials give you lots of things to look for. So pay attention to that. The other thing is, if the client says, no, I'm not planning to commit suicide, I don't have any plan, I don't have the means to carry it out, you might still be in a position of needing to refer them to emergency services because there are other factors to take into account. If my nephew had said no in a way that I didn't believe, I would have kept asking questions and not hesitated to alert whoever was appropriate in that case. Does that make sense? So, yes, you ask the questions, but if they say yes, take action. If they say no or the answers are unclear, you still may need to take action based on the totality of circumstances, how hopeless they are, what you know about this client, behavioral changes you've seen, and your intuition. Does that make sense?
Yes. Terry, can I ask you a question? This is David.
Yes, David.
What happens if they, if you ask the question and they tell you no, but yet down the road something goes wrong? And you didn't take action at the time when they said no because you believed them enough to not want to take action.
Okay. Well, what do you mean what happens?
What would happen if the family tried to come after you or something? If it was,
you're worried about your liability.
Yeah, that would be a liability issue. Yeah.
Okay. Well, liability is going to depend on all the facts and circumstances of what was going on. So, you know, did you check in with the client? I had a client a couple of years ago who was very despondent and depressed. She was also seeing a psychotherapist at the time, and she had a psychiatrist for medication management. And she came to a call. She had been feeling worse and worse and worse, and she came to a call, and she sounded very hopeless. I asked her those questions. She assured me that she was not suicidal, but I followed up with her the next day. Use your common sense is the answer.
Okay. Right.
I followed up with her the next day. I thought she needed a medication, perhaps a medication
mm-hmm.
change.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when I suggested that initially, she was resistant. She didn't feel like going in to see the psychiatrist. But, you know, she was being treated for anxiety and depression. And sometimes those drugs need
mm-hmm.
to be altered, but, you know, the body chemistry.
Right, right.
So I stayed on her until she actually went in and had the appointment. And lo and behold, the psychiatrist changed the medication. But you see, if I had just stopped and she became,
mm-hmm.
she started to feel better again. If I had just stopped like, oh, okay, no problem, she's seeing a therapist, she's seeing a psychiatrist, I'm off the hook because she said no to me, I would have felt terrible if something happened.
Sure.
So use your common sense.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to your point one, when in doubt, take action.
Hmm?
It just goes back to your point one, when in doubt, if you're in doubt, take action.
Right. Now, what I was talking about when I said that a few minutes ago is take action with emergency services.
Right,
you know,
right.
If you believe there's an increased risk for suicide, you get emergency services which means either the Lifeline or 911 local emergency services.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're overseas, you've got lots of materials on how to find emergency services where you are. And if
right.
none of that works and you're somewhere else, find it out. But
okay.
take action in a less drastic situation like the one
sure.
I had
mm-hmm.
is use your good judgment, your common sense, use your intuition, your body compass,
right.
and follow up with somebody. You know, nothing
right.
is perfect. Somebody like that
sure.
could slip through the cracks. But I have a feeling if you were working with somebody that despondent, you know, you're going to know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they're not seeing a mental health therapist, they need to be. And if this
right.
woman hadn't been seeing somebody, I probably wouldn't have started working with her in the first place. But
right.
I had another client where her anxiety from the coaching just peaked. I mean, the coaching itself really was upsetting to her, just really looking at her life and whatnot. She was in Australia. I said, you've got to find a local therapist, and I stopped working with her because the coaching was provoking the anxiety.
Mm.
So it may need a referral. It may need follow-up to
right.
go into mental health services. It may need something else, but
gotcha.
use your good judgment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's see.
Terry?
Yeah.
This is Tracy, and I have a question on this too. And excuse me, this has to do with a couple of friends, but I think about them in terms of coaching because I could see similar scenarios come up.
Uh-huh.
And I had one friend who's a good friend who I'd known for a long time and was going through a really difficult period of his life. And I was very aware of why he was going through this. And he would often talk to me like, I'm not sure it's just worth going on. And then he started to get more and more like, I can picture doing certain things to end it. And I'm just going one day at a time. And as it started to get worse and worse, I finally was like, you have to go see someone. This is not okay. This is not normal. You have too much to live for. You're a young man. You really, really. And I followed up with him. I continued.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he never hit that point where I felt like he was contemplating. And he was seriously contemplating.
Those are all warning signs. I can picture ending it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
like having a plan.
Yes, and I...
That's a plan. Yeah.
And so instead of me just, like, calling some professional help, so if I had done that, I think that would have really scared him off, like if I had called a suicide hotline for him or something like that. You know, I think that would have been really offensive to him, but I could continue to call him every day and say, have you called someone and gotten help yet, because we were friends.
Right.
Now, and he did, and he was on medication for a while, and he got off, and he recovered from that whole period.
Right.
So, yeah, so that was really insightful, but it made me, it kind of worried me because I wonder when I would really know. And I have another friend who actually, for as long as I've known her, has been in a very unhappy place in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no amount of just talk that has ever been able to help her. And she's the kind of person who has already done tons and tons and tons of therapy for years and says to me, I had some very good therapists, but now nobody can help me.
Uh-huh.
And she's in a financial situation that she feels like, if I can't improve this financial situation, I'm just done. I'm just done. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm just done. And she's been talking this way for so long.
I hate to cut you off, but
it's
a little mindful. Whoops.
Right.
Can you guys hear that?
Yes.
Can you all hear me?
Barely.
Okay.
Barely.
If you are on
there
Skype,
we go.
Okay.
It's gone.
If you are on Skype, just 4-star yourself. please, with the Skype touchpad. It might be Skype that did that. I'm just glad it came back on. Okay, now go ahead.
Okay, to my point, I'm just really, like, full of self-doubt with this person. I really don't know. Like, I can't tell. You know, I can't get her to see a therapist because she's already ruled that out. But she talks about ending it more and more and more. And I feel really unsure of myself. Is she serious, you know?
I don't know. I don't know. And, you know, I mean, you're a good friend to keep talking to her about this. What is your question here, though, that I can help?
Oh, right, because I could see myself being in a similar situation with a client. If I'm coaching someone and they were talking just like her, I would feel the same insecurity about going, I can't tell what this person really needs.
That is not somebody you should continue a coaching relationship with, period.
Okay,
Make a referral to a mental health professional, unless it sounds like they're going to do something before that can happen, then you do get emergency services involved. And you know, let's talk about friend number two. If somebody is coming to a coaching relationship sounding like that and it's fighting, well, first of all, if they sound like that at the beginning, I wouldn't touch them with a 10-foot pole. If
right.
Slide like that, you know, after a few sessions and you hear all this despondency, you make a referral and you agree to continue to work with them if they're working with a therapist and the therapist approves of it. And if they balk, you basically end the relationship right then and there.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Now, if the guy, what you said is that you thought that calling emergency services would have gotten him upset and possibly caused more harm than good.
Right.
That's what I want to point out to you as the difference. That was a friend. You had a long history with him. You probably knew a lot more about him and could gauge his moods and, you know, what might happen better. With a client, it's a different dynamic. We don't know that much. We're not free to call family members and say, hey, watch this. With a client, if they are sounding despondent, I'm going to ask those questions, and I'm going to put something into motion. Now, your energy in the way you show up, do you hear the tone of my voice right now? You know, if I was talking to somebody suicidal, I might soften my voice a little bit, but I wouldn't budge an inch as far as the necessity for this to happen. You need to talk to somebody. You need to talk to somebody right now. I'm going to get the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline on the phone right now because they can help you. And I'm going to stay on the line with you until we get you hooked in because I'm in over my head with this. I'm not trained for this, and I care about you, and I want to get you help. And then you do it. And I can't imagine anybody resisting that. If they resisted, I would call 911 because we have a different relationship, and supposedly, you know, we're supposed to be trained in and know what we're doing here. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. It's very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. And okay. I could see why, you know, having two people in your circle like that, why you would have some concern.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for the question. The other thing I want to talk about is the client who is in possibly dangerous to someone else. And again, I would think if you're screening your people well, I've never had anybody. Most of my clients are self-flagellating, self-abusive, and they, you know, for them to blame somebody else in their life is rare. You know, I have a few that get angry and lash out, but I've never had anybody come close to threatening a third party. Get legal help if that happens. You know, I'm going to kill my husband. I'm going to, you know, whatever. I can't even make up a scenario. It's so hard for me to imagine. But if you suspect that they are a danger to others in the future, you get legal help or contact Renee and I. But take action pretty quickly. If you can't get us, get to a lawyer, get some help, do something. But legal advice is what you need at that point because jurisdictions vary widely. Okay. Again, remote in the extreme that this would happen. The more likely scenario, though, is you learn of some kind of abuse going on. It has happened and it's continuing, or it's continuing. Typically, child abuse. Now, what child abuse is tricky to define. And some people think that corporal punishment is abuse. Some people don't. When in doubt, call your state agency, call them anonymously, and start asking a bunch of questions. The duty to report varies widely depending on where you are and where the client is. Again, these are tough calls to make, so get some help. Again, it's going to be remote, but we want you to be aware that these issues might come up from time to time. Questions about confidentiality and exceptions?
Hi, Terry. It's Melissa. I did want to mention that there is a website that defines that for each state. It's rainn.org, I think. And you can look on each state, and it defines what abuse is and if you're required to report it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think I gave you something like that in your materials, a state-by-state, you know, legal, whatever. If you would email that to me, or post it on the forum under our class thread after class. Would you do that?
Okay. Absolutely.
And then I'll look at it, and maybe I'll include it in the materials in the future. If that's a good resource. That being said, you know, just, again, what concerns me here is you're in New York, the client is in Oklahoma. Does New York law prevail or does Oklahoma law prevail? If it was me, I'd probably call Oklahoma and see what the duty to report is. If there is no duty to report and this is still bothering you, then you've got a different problem on your hands. You know, there's no duty to report, but you know that the client is continuing to abuse a child, losing her temper and beating the crap out of a little kid. What do you do then? What would you do?
Hi, again, it's Melissa, and I'm so glad you brought this up because this was one of my questions.
Okay.
And all I could think to do was kind of use my own body compass and make the decision.
What decision?
Whether or not to report, but I'd certainly let the person know what I was going to do.
Well, I think what you need, the first step is to get that client with a local therapist. Okay? This is not somebody coachable when this is going on like this. Does that
what if they're with a therapist already?
Well, then you would say, does your therapist know about this? yes, I want you to tell your therapist that you are losing control. It's possible that you need medication. Maybe you need referral to a psychiatrist for medication here. You know, usually somebody like that is full of remorse. You know, it's not something they're intentionally planning, but, you know, the behavior gets out of control and they lose it and you know, hit the kid. So I would insist that a therapist be consulted. And I would, if they're seeing a therapist already, I would ask my client for consent to talk to their therapist so that I could have a conversation with the therapist and share my concerns. And I have done that in the past, not about child abuse, but I did it around another issue where I basically had a client that I thought was really, there was a third party, a family member, paying for my coaching. And the doctor, the psychiatrist, brought me in, and brother is paying for the sessions, and nothing was really happening. And I got the client's permission to talk to the therapist, the psychiatrist, and I said, look, you know, she's coming in week after week and not, you know, we're not getting anywhere. I don't think she's being honest with me. And the doctor said, yeah, I think that's the case too, but please stay on. And I said, well, I'll do a few more sessions, but if there's no change, I'm going to withdraw because I can't take the brother's money in good conscience. And it's very, you know, it's not fun to work with her. We're not getting anywhere, and perhaps she needs somebody else. And I went a few more sessions, and the same stuff happened where, you know, she was just full of excuses and denial, and it was the world's fault. And I couldn't get anywhere with her with thought work and this, that, and the other. So I just withdrew, and I notified the psychiatrist that I was withdrawing. I notified the brother that I was withdrawing, but not why. So that gives you some ideas about how to handle these real-life scenarios. Okay, what else? Well, Rachel?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go back over. Everybody get out the ethical decision-making model. And let's go through it with Rachel's scenario. So you were seeing the wife for health coaching. What does health coaching involve? What are you doing?
So it's a twice a month for 6 months, and I coach a client on getting healthier, usually losing weight, but it's usually other things in addition to that, sleeping better, feeling better, things like that.
Yeah. In this particular scenario, what's the issue that she's come to you about?
She pretty much just that, wanted to lose a few pounds, wanted to feel better, you know, very stressed at work, has a very high-powered job.
Okay. Okay.
But we primarily have talked about food. It's all. It's mostly 90% fun about food and meditation now. It's being introduced and exercise.
Okay. And then did she send the husband to you?
I actually approached him because I wanted to get my hours, paid hours for Martha Beck training. And I knew that he had been struggling the last couple of years to figure out what he wanted to do when he grew up. So I sent him an email and said, you know, hey, I'm doing this. I've got to get some paid hours. Would you be interested? And I actually didn't think he was going to say yes, and then he was all about it. So I was kind of excited.
How did you know about him?
Well, he's my – oh, because I know them.
Okay, these are people you know personally.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So let's look at the decision-making model. And we start with the facts. Do you – and the – you know, the question is, what do you do now the wife is kind of, you know, she wants to know what's going on, right?
Well, she hasn't come out and asked yet, but she's been kind of giving me information about him. So I'm worried that that might be coming next. And I just kind of want to be prepared.
Okay.
Like she tells me, she's been, you know, in her emails to me about, you know, whether how her meditation is going or whether she's making her kale salads, she's also giving me information about him.
What so type of information she will give you?
Just like, oh, I heard you sent him a book. You know, he's not great at reading books. He might not read it. Meanwhile, he's already read like 3 chapters, so uh-huh. I'm not that worried about it. But just kind of getting in his business a little bit.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. So do you have all the facts or do you need more information?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Do I have all the facts about what?
Well, that's the first part of our decision-making model. Do I have all the facts? Mm. Or is there more information you need to gather?
I guess I just need to be patient and see if she does cross over that line. She hasn't yet. I guess I'm just anticipating how to handle it if she does. She hasn't asked me what we've talked about or what happened.
Okay.
She so far is just giving me information, but
okay.
I worry she's going to then expect information back from me.
I've got a couple of questions for you. Do the food and lifestyle choices impact him in any way? You're working with her on healthier choices. And
well, it's funny because
shopping
he's actually started eating healthier. he's actually started to like a lot of the healthy things she's been cooking. So it has been in a positive way affecting him, yes.
Did you ask her permission before you reached out to him?
I did, yes. I did. I didn't really ask permission, but I don't know if I phrased it as permission, but I said, hey, you know, he might be interested. I might, do you think, yeah, actually, I did, now that I think about it, because it was in the email. And I said, you know, I have to get some life coaching hours, and he might be a great candidate because he's trying to figure out what he wants to do with his career. And that's a big issue for me. I love working with people that are trying to figure out what they want to do when they grow up. So, yes, I did. And she said, yeah, he might be interested. She wasn't really sure, but he might be. And then he was. So it was good.
Okay. Let's move on to the who. Who is involved and who might be impacted by any decision you make beyond yourself and your client?
So I guess just the husband and wife and mm-hmm. their daughter's impacted as well.
How old's the daughter?
She's 10.
Okay. So there's a child at home that could potentially
yes.
be impacted. Okay. Let's move on to the concerns. What are our concerns here, and what are they about?
I guess my biggest concern is that I just want to make sure that I am honoring him and not giving any information that he's uncomfortable with to his wife, and making sure that it's clear to her that I did send him an agreement at the beginning that it would be confidential and
mm-hmm.
all
mm-hmm.
that. So he knows, but I'm not sure that she knows.
Okay. I have a concern about a different issue that you have not perhaps noticed. And this is not a criticism of
okay.
you at all. I'm not judging you. I'm trying to teach you guys because you're brand new. You have a potential conflict of interest here. Can you think of what it might be?
Well, obviously they're married, so that's
they're
you mean
married.
Having a clients that are related. Is that the
well? Yeah. But how might a decision one makes as a result of coaching impact the other in a way that interferes with the other relationship you have?
So in other words, if I coached him and he decides he wants to do a career that she doesn't like.
Exactly.
Something like
what
that.
What if he wants to become a poet? What if he wants to run away to Alaska and become a salmon fisherman?
Yeah, I get your point. I think because she wasn't a life coach client that I didn't really worry about this. Had she been a life coach client, I never would have taken him on, but because she was a health coach, but now I'm realizing there's this gray area. There's kind of
what's
the
difference
between
a health coach and a life?
They overlap. Health coach, I mean, we stick to certain topics. I don't tend to go above and beyond have the health of the – we don't talk a lot about we talk a lot about food and exercise and –
No, I get that.
But we don't go deep into the other.
I get that, but do you have a confidential relationship with her? What if he started saying, you know, I'm really turned off by her weight gain. You know, it's affecting our sex life. Can you get her moving faster on this?
Yeah, that's a little stressful.
I mean, the point is,
my
point is that I think you do have a coaching relationship with her. You can call it health coach. Remember, we're in a very gray area with all of this. We're trying to make the best decisions that we possibly can in a new field without a lot of regulation and precedent and rules, you see. But I'm going to bet you the fact that she's feeding you information and, you know, she's got some anxiety about him and his happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so. She's his wife, you know. I mean, I would probably, if I didn't have the education and the background, I would be in my husband's business about something like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So in the future, I shouldn't take on clients that are related to each other.
Well, I want you to see we're going
at the same time, maybe. I mean,
we're just suspend judgment right now. What we're doing is going through this model, and we're going to look at what your options are, okay? Because you're in it now.
Yeah.
And maybe you will choose differently in the future. Continue with this. So you've got a potential conflict of interest, and you've got a possible confidentiality issue if she begins to press you for what's going on. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Make sense? And the one issue you identified, and the other one you didn't, but that's okay. Again, I'm not being critical of you at all. Okay.
So I think I should be transparent and clear about the fact that it's confidential, that the life coaching, and to a certain extent the health coaching too. I guess I need to be clear for myself that they're coaching. They're the same.
Well, if somebody was coaching me about my food choices and, you know, whatnot, I really wouldn't want that discussed with any other person. Would you?
Right. No.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why, if you call it health coaching, it would fall, you know, that would be any different. And the idea is we offer confidentiality.
Yeah, I guess not.
So that we get honest answers. You know, if I eat a gallon of ice cream every night, I want to make sure that if I tell you that, it's not going to be spread around somewhere.
Right. Yeah, and I do treat whatever my health clients tell me, I do treat confidential.
Yeah.
I don't share information. So I have been honoring it. I guess I just didn't see it to the same level as life coaching, but now I'm starting to.
Well, it's my job to think of these things, too, right? So the fact that I thought of it and you didn't, you know, I've been thinking about these kind of issues for years and years and years, way before I ever became a coach. But let's continue going through here. Let's find three options, three possible options of what you can do here, keeping confidentiality in mind. So should you do nothing, get more information, make a referral, be transparent, consult a mentor or advisor? Well, you're doing that right now. So one option is get some advice, right?
I also think I should be transparent and just make sure that it's clear to both of them that it's confidential, whatever they say to me.
Uh-huh. Yep. Okay.
And then going forward, I don't think I would take on husband and wife again, at least not at the same time. I mean, maybe if it were separated by years or months, but to be doing it at the same time, I don't think it makes sense.
Right. I'm fairly comfortable taking on this daughter of my former client because it's been 3 years since she and I worked together.
Right.
You know? And the issue isn't a conflict between them. But if she said to me, my daughter is being really disrespectful and I want you to work with her because she's cursing me out and having temper tantrums in the house and she needs somebody to work with, I might have a different issue around that, you know? And the first thing I asked her this morning is, how's your relationship with your mom? And how are your other family relationships? Because I wanted to make sure that really, honestly, I believe that so much of that has to do with the parent as much as the child. And I would have probably preferred to work with the mom and continue that relationship and then find somebody else for the daughter. But because there was a separation in time and because it was a totally different issue and the relationship between the two of them was a good one, I felt comfortable proceeding. Now, I'm going to assume that the relationship between this couple is a good one. And the conflict you've got is potential, right? It's just a possible thing lurking out there.
Right.
When I do couples coaching, and the ground rule is, do both of you want to improve the relationship? Because if somebody is thinking they might want to leave, I only want to work with one of them, and I will refer the other one out for coach,
Mm-hmm.
If both parties want to work towards the improvement of the marriage, then I can work with them together. But if one of them is not so sure, do you see how I've got a possible conflict there?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So with a career and high-powered people, I mean, I don't know. You haven't said what his career challenges are. So why don't you give us a few more facts there?
Plumber. He's a plumber, and he just he's been doing it for years, and he wants to do something else. He's a very social person, so he wants
uh-huh.
to be able to – you know, be around people rather than being with plumbing things.
Okay.
So he just feels like it's not the right career, and he's been doing it for a really long time. And he's getting older. It's taking its toll on his body. And
yeah. Okay. So there's some facts, some more facts that, you know, you just provided us with. Okay. Now, we're looking for three possible options. We want to find at least three. So one, get some advice. Two, be transparent with both of them that these are independent, confidential relationships. What else? What are some other options?
I guess the third could be to refer him to someone else.
Yeah.
I don't really want to do that, but that could be an option if it really got uncomfortable.
Okay. And what would make it uncomfortable?
I mean, if they both started pressing each other about, you know, pressing me for information. I mean, that hasn't happened, but that would make me uncomfortable.
Okay. What if he says he's always dreamed of being a salmon fisherman in Alaska, and he dreams of doing that?
I think he's pretty clear-headed, because we've actually already touched on that that he
well,
does
I'm giving
actually
you a
want
what
to
if.
Get some money at his. yeah, I can.
Or
I
he
can
wants to be a poet,
or
he wants to go back to college and
right.
have her support him.
He actually already did that. He went back to college a few years ago.
Right, but I'm throwing this out. What if he wants a master's degree now?
Right.
You know? Okay. So
yeah,
I just
so
want you to see that it might get uncomfortable for a different reason other than them pressing
yeah, I'm
for information.
That.
It might,
right.
you know, you might do it if they could be potentially at cross purposes. His dreams would interfere with what she might regard as her well-being.
Right, and I never thought about how, you know, her ability to lose weight or her ability to be healthy would affect him. I hadn't even thought about that. So that was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, somehow it would be my fault if she didn't lose 10 pounds.
Whose fault?
Somehow it would be my fault, you know, like he would blame me or...
Oh,
so that's interesting. I mean,
you
brought that up. It had never even occurred to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. All right. So here's our three possible options. One, get some advice. We're doing that. Number two, be transparent with both of them that these are confidential and independent relationships. Three, you can wait and let it unfold a little more and then possibly refer him somewhere else, depending on whether the confidentiality, you know, somebody pressed you and didn't hear you on the confidentiality, or, you know, his dreams start emerging in a way that puts them at odds with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or you find out something about the health coaching that puts them at odds with each other, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's go on to the consequences. And the reason we're going through it like this, Rachel, is I want you and the class to be able to analyze these things pretty independently.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, You may not have enough experience right now to spot issues like I can, but at least you can go through this with the issues you do have and can spot. And then Renee and I are always available to you guys for ethical consultations. And we do that without charge, just as a service to the community. Okay. So what are the consequences of each option? Okay, number one, what are the consequences of getting some advice?
I don't see any negative. Are these just negative consequences?
No.
I don't see anything negative about that.
Yeah, you're just getting.
I mean, I think that knowledge is power. So I don't see any negative consequences to that.
Okay, I don't either. Okay. What about being transparent with them? This is a confidential relationship and you're separate clients. What are the consequences there?
Again, I think as long as they're clear and that the knowledge is there, I think it's good for them to be knowledgeable about what I can and can't do.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. And it might encourage the wife to, you know, to relax a little bit around her nosiness.
Yeah.
Okay. The third option, referring him elsewhere if it got uncomfortable for those two reasons we've identified. What are the consequences
mm-hmm.
there?
I guess I would have less money in the bank.
Right.
Other than that, I mean, I think as long as I send him to a good coach, I think it's all good there, except
right.
for my bank account. But
right. Now, you know, we always have a financial conflict with ourselves when we refer somebody elsewhere for mental health reasons, because you've got a couple with a conflict between them, because your body compass is saying, don't take this on. There is always that kind of conflict. But remember, we are fiduciaries. Remember that word from the recording and the materials? That means that we are always to act in the client's best interest, even when it's not in our own best interest. So your financial consequences are there. They're real. You're very honest to point that out. What do you do about those consequences? Does that change what you're going to do? You there, Rachel? Hello? Can you guys hear me?
Well, yes.
Okay. For some reason, she is muted. I'm going to unmute this. Rachel? I don't know if... Oh, there's two Rachels in here. It says left. There's another Rachel at area code 650.
I think you just unmuted the other Rachel. I'm unmuted now. I heard it say that.
Okay. If you will go ahead and remute.
I'm going to remute. Okay. I'm checking out of this.
I see down at the bottom here that Rachel dropped off the call. We'll give her a minute.
Hi, I'm back. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, good. No problem. Okay. So I don't know how much of that you heard, but I was congratulating you on your transparency with us about admitting your own reluctance. You lose certification hours and some income. But did you hear the part about the fiduciary relationship?
No.
Okay. This is part of the recording and the, you know, the basic materials. But we as fiduciaries, it means we're in a position of trust with our clients. And when there is a conflict between what's in the client's best interest and what's in our best interest, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah, best interest of the client, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So let's see. Which option makes the most sense based on the considerations we just went through, your values, your ethics, your body compass, your common sense? Which of those three options?
I think right now with what's happened thus far, keeping the clients and being very transparent and open, and then if it changes, I think reassessing it. But for right now,
okay,
it's all dirty pain. Nothing really has happened. It's bad.
Okay.
I can imagine things that
okay.
could go wrong.
Good. Okay. Our next consideration is the universality of the option chosen. Would you do this for every client, or are you making a special exception here?
I think from the very beginning I was making a special exception. I don't think that I would approach someone, husband or wife, in the future. And I think because I'm in training and also because, say, I know them, I'm a bit more open to doing it.
Uh-huh.
But in the future, I don't think I would try to coach, at least definitely not at the same time.
Right. Okay. You know, this one comes up from time to time where, you know, the client winds up in an abusive situation, or you've got a teenager you're coaching and they're not getting along at home, and you say, oh, come stay with me. Would you do that for every client? If you wouldn't, then you may have an issue here where you're not thinking as clearly. So we want to make sure that, by and large, what we're offering this client and the action we're going to take is the same that we would offer across the board to any client in this situation. So here, you know, you may handle it differently in the future, But right now, I think you can honestly say, you know, any other client you're in this situation with, you would move towards advice and transparency. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And I don't think I would put myself in this position again.
Yeah. It's okay. Again, do not use this as any fodder for getting down on yourself.
No, you know, it's interesting. I'm not taking this criticism at all, and it's just interesting to me that I didn't consider it being a conflict of interest at first until I got that email, and then all of a sudden I had this very uneasy feeling, and I realized, ooh, this is probably a conflict of interest.
Uh-huh.
So experience is one of the best, you know, ways you can learn.
Right. And, you know, I do a lot of relationship coaching, and I will often have somebody say, you know, I want you to talk to my husband. You know, I think he could use your help. And, you know, it never really goes too far. I will tell you that. So,
Would you coach with them, or would you say, oh, I can refer a great person, but it won't be
you
me?
Know, it depends on the circumstances. On this one, I would probably pass. If it was a relationship thing, you know, he drives me nuts when he blah, 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 there I would suggest a joint session. You know, I've had clients say, you say this so much better than me. I say, well, let's practice how you say it. Well, still, would you talk to him? I'll tell you what, I'll talk to him in a joint appointment is probably how I'd handle something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The next consideration in our decision-making model is the light of day. How would I feel if this was in the newspaper or on Facebook or if it came to light in some public way? And so this is just another way of looking at the problem to make sure we're not doing something that we really have some qualms about because we wouldn't want anybody to know, you know. I'm renting my spare room out to a client, and I don't really want anybody to know I'm doing that.
Yeah, I don't feel like this is a secret. I don't feel like I've done anything wrong.
Yeah. So no problem here.
Yeah.
As far as the light of day goes. Okay. The body. Do I have any guilt, fear, or any square one story about this situation?
I don't think so. I think I actually feel calmer about it because I feel like now I have options. If it goes one direction, I know what to do, and if it stays the same, I know what to do. So, no, I don't think so.
Okay. But the point is, you checked in with yourself.
Yeah.
And so your body compass is comfortable with the options that we've chosen.
Yeah, especially since I'm working with the two people on totally separate issues. Like, it's not like I'm coaching them on both on food or on relationship or
right.
You know, career and health are a little bit frustrated.
Right.
So that makes me a little more comfortable in that regard.
Right.
As well.
Right. And just for those of you who may wind up doing some relationship work, well, I'll come back to that in a minute. Rachel, thank you. Thank you for your honesty, for your transparency, and for your you know, willingness to jump in and go through this today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
A really good scenario.
I'm glad.
I'm sorry, I have a elderly dog here who pants when he needs my attention, and then I can't hear you guys. And I think he needs to go out to the backyard. Yes, I'm right behind you. Come here. Yep, that's what it was. Time to have my break, he said. Okay. All right, so what I was going to say with couples coaching, at least the way I do it, I'm asked to work with a couple from time to time who have some kind of issue going on in their relationship. I first make sure that they're both willing and interested in participating, and they have a common goal. They want to improve the relationship. They may have differing ideas about what that means, but that's the job of the coaching, to get them both on the same page. I'm totally comfortable with that. But if one says to me, you know, unless we get this resolved, I'm out of here, then to me, I've got a conflict, and I'm not going to take them on as a couple. I will take on one of them. Now, once they are engaged, and couples coaching is very tricky. It's advanced work, so I would really encourage you guys to really know what you're doing and be comfortable with the tools and comfortable in a coaching relationship before you take this on, because there's all kinds of judgments to make here. And what I typically do is I'll do a session or two with them together, but I find that doing really honest thought work is impossible with two people on the phone. I can't, you know, get to that level. Now, usually one of the two is in a higher anxiety state, or I can tell is going to be more transparent with me during the coaching. And that's usually the wife. And she's usually got an agenda for the husband. If he would change this, then we can both be happy. That has been my experience in my practice, at least. So what I will do is work with her for a few sessions and see what's going on. And I let him know that I'm going to be working with her privately and that nothing is going to go on behind his back, that she or I or both won't be comfortable talking about, but I can usually get further and it's more effective and efficient to work with one rather than both at a time. And I did this with a couple recently. In fact, they were referred to me by one of my coaching students, and they, my student was working with the daughter, and she was worried about her parents. And the parents were referred to me because he had a stroke and, as a result, was forced into early retirement. He almost died. The wife was present when this was going on. It was very traumatizing to her, and she was hovering over him and watching him like a hawk and upset that he didn't seem to take his health concerns seriously enough and would go out on bicycle rides and things that she considered dangerous. And, you know, but they were both, they both loved each other and wanted to stay together. I worked with them both one session, and then I said to her, you and I need to work separately. I got his permission to do that, and in the first session alone, she fell apart. She totally broke down sobbing and was finally able to express all of the fear and upset that she had been holding in, because he was the one that had gotten all the attention, quite rightfully. He had the medical emergency. And once she was able to really let go of that, and she had some grieving to do too, because this guy wasn't exactly the same guy that he used to be before. He had had a stroke, and there were some cognitive issues still going on. And his recovery was long and slow and arduous, and she felt kind of cheated. And so she was, you know, she was never going to leave him or be unkind to him, but it was good for her to be able to express those things, and we did some thought work, and I held space for her while she cried and reassured her that it was, She wasn't being selfish by having these reactions and feelings. And I think she and I worked together a total of 3 sessions. Then I did a joint session. I did a couple sessions alone with him, and they were done. They were happy campers. And it was that ability, though, a common goal, but then I worked with them separately. Now, you may find in your own work, if you choose to do this down the road, you'll find your own way to do it. But that seems to work really well for me in the way I do it. But again, I consider it advanced work. I didn't take it on when I was a new coach. So, what other questions have come up as we've been working through? Nobody has any questions. Well, how about a question about anything then? Oh, somebody's here. Okay.
I have a question.
Okay.
Somebody said to me that you shouldn't keep any notes in case somebody needs them for something, like they'd be subpoenaed or something, that they were told that. Is that true?
Who am I talking to?
This is Cindy. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I just like to have a name. Sure. Who told you that?
Another cadet told me that they heard one of the master coaches saying that they get rid of everything. They don't hold on to any notes at all.
I would sure like to trace that back to which master coach is saying that. Would you mind asking your friend, just, you know, and understand I have a great relationship with all the master coaches, but sometimes, you know, your friend may have heard something in error, but it's really
right.
Helpful for me. One of the instructors a few years ago was posting on the forum about doing some stealth coaching, and I just had a little email exchange with her and said, you know what, I'm teaching these guys informed consent, and stealth coaching is without consent. So, and she was
right.
Like, oh my God, I never thought of that. She was kind of making a joke about
yes.
Stealth coaching of a family member. And so it helps me educate people. But here's the answer. Keep notes as you need them.
Right.
I think good professional practice requires record keeping. I
okay.
often go back and refer to my notes. I keep them in my hard drive. But there's nothing in them that make any sense to anybody else. I will tell you that. It's not like a transcript or a recording. Remember, I'm doing mostly square one thought work. So I'm listening
right.
for thoughts. Nobody is telling me, you know, I've got a secret bank account in the Cayman Islands and I'm hiding hundreds of thousands of dollars from my husband. I've yet to hear anything that would really be useful, should there be any kind of conflict. And I use my notes. I refer back to them. Clients can come back years later, and I switched to keeping typewritten notes a couple of years ago because it's easier for me to find them. And you know, when I kept paper records, it was just more stuff for me to have to deal with.
Right.
So they're easily accessible, but I think that you got to look at the risk of that happening, which I think is very, very small. And the advantage for me, taking notes, I've been taking notes this whole class. Because it helps me pay attention to what I'm doing. And
right.
it gives me something to refer back to. And when I'm doing the work with somebody, 100% of the time I will write down the thought.
Yes.
And notes within that. Because I can't remember from 1 minute to the next sometimes because we get so intrigued and twisted around with some of the things we're talking about. So I disagree. Okay. I think at a minimum you should have a record of client dates that you worked with somebody. That's just good professional practice. If
right.
you're a note taker and they help you, take notes. If they don't worry about it. There are times you will absolutely want to have notes. You're going to want
yeah.
to have a track record of clients seem despondent and hopeless today. I ask the suicide questions. Client denies having a plan, denies thinking of suicide, denies having the means to commit suicide. I would track all that and make complete CYA type notes there. Client was
okay.
informed that they their therapist about what is going on and get an appointment with their psychiatrist for a medication change. Client agreed to do this immediately. And then every time and this is just what I did, by the way, with the client I told you about that was despondent and her psychiatrist
yep.
wound up making a medication change. You better believe I have a written record of all of that. So there are times when notes are very protective of us. I think that's more likely than the rare occasion when our notes might get subpoenaed. And again, lots of luck making sense out of them because they're not.
Yeah. I know. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate the clarification.
You're very welcome. Anyone else? Isn't that a coincidence? We're right here at time. You know, you guys, you're coming up towards the end. You're coming up towards the end of your whole training journey. Are you excited about that?
Any words, any advice, any words of encouragement from you as we get close to the end?
I do, actually. First of all, I'm going to tell you, it gets better. I know some of you will be very sentimental about leaving coaching, but I went through my basic training with Bridget Boudreau, who's now CEO of MBI, Sheila Whittington, who's a master coach. We're still good friends. Jackie Gartman is the person that I first spoke to about whether I wanted to be a Martha Beck coach or not. She and I are best of friends. And, you know, I've known these people for 8-9 years now. So it's not like anybody is going anywhere. And those are just three off the top of my head. Susan Grace Beekman and I are close friends. Susan Hyatt and I are friends. The gathering in Texas was a big hug fest, because we don't get to see each other a lot, but we stay in touch, and you guys will too. And the coaching just gets better and better and better. The other thing I want to tell you guys is that I may sound like I know what I'm doing, but I didn't always. Okay? I made lots and lots and lots of mistakes along the way. You know, I tried and failed many, many times. It was awkward for me. I had egg on my face more than once. But as I began doing this a bunch of times, I began to see patterns in what was going on. And I began to say the same thing into those response to those patterns enough times that the words just flowed from me to clients. For example, I explained the coaching framework, which is one of the things I always do with clients, you know, that circumstances drive facts, thoughts drive feelings drive behavior. I've explained that so many times that I can do it almost in my sleep. But the first few times I tried to explain that to a client, it was awkward, and I had to think about it. And it didn't sound so good. I discovered that I can do thought work without explaining Byron Katie's life story to clients, which is where I started, including the fact that she woke up on the floor of the halfway house in a state of bliss and has never left it since when she realized that her thoughts were creating her misery. I don't have to tell clients that anymore, but I sure did it enough at the beginning because I felt so insecure. But it came over time. It came as I was doing my own inner work. I softened up as a person. Over the years, Martha has softened. Bridget has softened. All of us have softened, and you guys likely will too, because we feel more secure in the world, more hopeful about the world. We're not as sheepish about our errors. I'm not, in particular, don't feel as sheepish talking about kindness and love and spirituality. And believe me, after 25 years in a courtroom, those were not words and concepts that just trickled off my tongue with ease. And they sure do now. So, you know, I'm telling you guys this so that you will give yourself lots and lots of time and space to grow. Treat yourselves with so much kindness and compassion. And, you know, just give yourself the time to learn and employ these tools and practice, and you're going to do great. And we, even, you know, the people I'm mentioning with our level of experience, we will still step in it and get stuck around old issues over and sometimes new issues over and over again. And we coach each other. We reach out. And in fact, many of the master coaches, we will hire each other if it's something that more than a session requires, to make it a formal relationship. I will say, you know, I want to pay you. I want some sessions to get to the bottom of this, and I want you to really give me your full time. And they will, you know, there are master coach instructors that will do that with me as well. So it's not a sign of failure. It's a sign of huge success when you're eager to look within and impatient to just get the junk up and out. So I'm so happy personally that I have a process now and a tribe to help keep me happy and on target with my goals in life, because I never had that before. And I wish all that for you guys too. So that's my advice for you, Edward, David, right?
David, yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Very well said.
You're so welcome. And, you know, the best of luck to all of you. And, you know, my door is always open. If I can help you in any way, I would love to.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
So welcome.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Take care. And any questions can go on the forum.
Great.
Great.
Okay.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Bye-bye.